Strap yourself in,
because we're set up, switched on, and ready to go.
Yes, sir, reading you loud and clear. The clock has started.
This week's episode of our podcast. Today we are going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our field. By sharing our collective expertise, we will show you how to harness, control, and use your own skill set to achieve ultimate success and live the life you want. And now, please welcome your host.
Welcome to this week's Smallest Cast podcast. This podcast is designed for small government contractors, service providers, and manufacturers as part of the government contractor ecosystem, connecting people, organizations, and resources. This week, with us in the room here, we got our CEO, Mr. Dennis Cater. Welcome, Dennis.
Thanks, Nate.
And on the phone, we have two folks from a company called Guidehouse. We have a Mr. Dr. Cameron Ward Hunt. He's the director of National Security Segment of Colorado. And we've got Stephanie Malone, who is a senior consultant with Guidehouse. So welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us on.
Yes, no problem, guys. We are just sitting here this Monday afternoon trying to ease off the rest of the day. And we're getting emails back and forth here for regular work that has us a little on edge, so.
No, and I'm laughing at Nate, actually, because he's like, Guidehouse, what kind of company are they? And I'm like, well, this is a good thing to have, Nate, onto the show, so they can tell us what they are. I know what they do.
No, I had to get my brain back wrapped around all the different ones we've been doing so far here. So I'm the one that has to do all of the setup for all of these podcasts and book them, and when you've got multiple per week, it starts all kind of meshing
fading
together.
In. Exactly. They're all related to government contracting.
Yeah, they're all part of this ecosystem.
That's right.
Ecosystem. I like that word.
They're all part of that.
Okay, so which one of you two wants to tell me in 2 minutes or less what Guidehouse does?
Nate, I'll give it a shot, and then Stephanie can correct me where I'm wrong. So, it's a great question. Guidehouse is a mid-sized consulting firm. We've got about 8,000 employees worldwide. We're pretty unique in the consulting space because we're split 50-50 between public sector and commercial clients, which makes us pretty unique. We come from the PwC public sector. That was our legacy brand. And we split off a few years ago to create the own brand called Guidehouse. But we trace our roots back to that public sector consulting that was part of PricewaterhouseCoopers. So it's a great firm. Our focus is really about solving big problems, building trust in society, and empowering our clients to shape the future. And we're excited to be here on today because we've got a great presence in Colorado, a Denver-based national security team, along with some stuff in Boulder for energy and healthcare. Stephanie, what would you add?
I think you hit it on the head there. Something I really want to talk about today is kind of how we want to intertwine ourselves into the space domain. So ready to talk about that. But yeah, you got it there.
I was just going to, you beat me to it. I was just going to ask her, what did he get wrong? Okay, so you say, Stephanie, you mentioned right away. I mean, that's the big word of the year right now is space. So why don't we launch into that? What are you guys doing in space side?
Yeah, so just to kind of back up a bit, I've been here in Colorado for a couple years now. And I'm recognizing that the space domain is experiencing exponential growth, right? Especially in the springs. I keep saying that instead of the gold rush, there's a space rush here in Colorado. And space is cool. And we'd like to bring Guidehouse into that and kind of offer some of what we can do for space. So helping with kind of the growing pains, and I'm sure particularly a new service like Space Force or a new COCOM like SpaceCom, would be encountering. You know, SpaceCom is supposed to be the new cool and sexy COCOM, and Space Force is the newest service with its very clear desire for innovation and for doing things differently, right? And here is an opportunity to build that in the right way and from the ground up. So I think it would just be really, really exciting to help build that out, especially with, you know, General Raymond insisting that Space Force needs to be lean and agile. You know, these are all things that are kind of in our wheelhouse. So, you know, it's exciting for us to hear him speak in that way.
I'm going to take offense to using SpaceCom as cool and sexy, because my buddies that work there, I'm not letting them go with that, okay? They're not going to get cool and sexy. But no, you're right. You're right.
Well, then I should feel good, because that's what he called me every morning.
What? No. Anyways, well, okay. No, that's true. That's a true a statement. And I thank you also for clarifying PwC, Pricewater, because I know we mentioned that earlier with acronyms, and we got to be careful that some folks don't always know what all the acronyms are. So thank you for clarifying that. And Guidehouse, it's a medium-sized company. You said 8,000 people. That's pretty large, especially for the small. So what's the presence of Guidehouse here in Colorado? Is it relatively large, hundreds, or where are you guys at?
So our national security team is fairly small. That's beneath 15. I think we're up to 14 right now. Guidehouse does have an energy and sustainability and infrastructure practice that's headquartered out of Boulder, and they've got several hundred people there. And we've got a small healthcare team in Denver as well, in the low teens. So probably 200 or so in Colorado total. But for doing national security, we act like a small business. It's really just about 14 of us that are kind of chipping away and making relationships and going after those hard problems, like Stephanie said.
Okay. And then on the energy side, I'm assuming, what are you guys doing there in Colorado? Do you know what kind of large picture are they doing, sustainable energy or what kind of subjects are you guys working on?
Yeah, that's right. So their focus is really helping clients prepare for the future and getting that sustainability aspect. So it looks like a few things. So some of what they do is, about decarbonization, just reducing footprint across the board. They've also got several fun projects for electrification as cities look at how they accommodate greater amounts of electric vehicles and prepare for that. So I know, in fact, up here in Breckenridge, they're preparing for that as well and figuring out where they put charging stations and how many they need. So they do kind of GIS enabled projects to figure out where their stations ought to be and how that's going to influence the electric grid. And then broader programs for just greenhouse gas reduction, how companies can get their footprints down, how governments can reduce what they do.
And is that commercial mostly, or is that government too, customer wise?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. So this is not my area, so I'll get a phone call if I screw this up too much. But I do know that they work with both. So some of them is working with energy companies, but they also do direct work with cities and states as they look to solve particular problems. So when you look at electrification, that's often something that comes up where they're interacting directly with the city. Sometimes, states like California or perhaps Texas might also be interested in grid fragility and things like that. So I know they do work at the state level as well.
Wow, that's really interesting. No, I always find all the energy stuff interesting. We don't seem to talk about that a lot, but it's huge here in Colorado. I'd say actually it's probably the second largest behind tourism, if I'm not mistaken. I know aerospace is in there too, but we do a lot, obviously, with the wind farms and the National Renewable Energy Lab and all the gas and oil drilling that's going on here and around here. So it's a very huge industry base. We just don't seem to talk, at least in our realm, we don't talk about it a lot. I find that fascinating.
Absolutely.
On the healthcare side, what's your guys' focus on that end? Are you mostly, and I'm going to get to the DoD piece here in a minute, but just trying to understand the company a little broader and give people a larger perspective.
Sure.
On the healthcare side, IT-ish or data rights, what kind of areas are you looking at there?
So I will admit I understand this practice very little, even when they explain it to me. But I know we do some healthcare supply chain management, which we've got kind of echoes with for national security as we look at supply chain risk management. So I know they do healthcare supply chain management and something called revenue management, which I could not explain to you in detail if you paid me.
Okay. Well, I'm down with that too. We start talking numbers and all that, I kind of run the other way.
I have somebody that does that for me.
What's that? Your wife?
No, I pay somebody to manage the finances. Well, of course, the wife too. I
you pay her too, right? So that leads us.
I think that's actually.
Go ahead.
That's actually what we do for clients, right? Is in some cases they pay us to help manage the revenues and some of the things going on with major healthcare institutions and providers, just to smooth that out and find efficiency.
I can't even imagine. I can't
manage service we offer
On the healthcare side. I can't imagine doing all those books and all the insurance and everything. That must be crazy. So let's talk the DoD side. I know you guys are budding in that area. What does a guidehouse do in general with regards to the DoD space?
Yeah, so we offer kind of several services that sometimes we bundle together and sometimes we do separately. So the first is really our core strategy and change management business. So what this looks like for clients is helping them with organizational transformation, process improvement, integration of hard problems. So what we see over and over again is that our clients' hard problems are always a blend of things, right? It's always a little bit of people, always a little bit of technology, and always a little bit of change management. We're always going through these changes. And so that's really our core kind of consulting practice, and that's what Stephanie and I do on a daily basis. We put that together sometimes with our financial management services. So this is part of the legacy of coming over from PricewaterhouseCoopers is a set of services that do audits, remediations, execution of financials, budget and planning integration. And we do that for clients, you know, all the way from unclassed to, you know, top secret, right? Which makes us a little bit unique in this space. Sometimes we put those together, you know, if you've got a client that has a hard problem with planning and budgeting and they really need to think through strategic integration of that, we bundle those services. We also have a growing analytics practice, so looking at how we do dashboards, visualization, and increasingly solve problems using AI and ML, put those together for clients. Again, often see that there are hard problems involved. Understanding data and understanding how to make decisions about it. So that's where we integrate our strategy and our analytics practice side by side. So those are kind of our core central offerings that we do in the defense and national security space. We've also got some really exciting kind of new micro offerings that we're working on. One is called user experience consulting. So if you're familiar with user experience research and design. It's the folks who, in theory, make interfaces better and easier to use. So what we found is while there's been a tremendous growth in the practice of both in the commercial sector in the past, you know, 10, 15 years, the government has often lagged behind on this, right? So we typically have engineers that drive the look and feel of an application or a website or a tool more than bringing in user research and doing sound practices. So we put together a team that integrates design, user experience research, change management, sometimes process improvement, Lean Six Sigma, put that all together so that we've really got a completely different way of experiencing a tool, an interface, or even a process. The other thing that we do that I'm really excited about is diversity, equity, and inclusion. So as we see increased emphasis across this from commercial and public sector alike, we've got a set of DE&I professionals that are cleared that can come in and help an organization increase their maturity with that, have some really difficult conversations, and really increase the value proposition that we're executing representative government across the board in the public sector, and that we're bringing our best talent into the mix and are able to leverage all the different voices.
Okay, so that was a lot. Okay, let me back up a little bit.
Yeah, sorry.
I took good notes. Yeah.
No, that's good. We are both writing.
Yes, it's very good because people like me forget things. Okay, so you said process improvement, core strategies, and change management. Are you guys kind of experts in ISO 9001 or CMMI? Is that kind of what you guys come in and help companies readjust or develop their processes for the first time? Or what would that look like?
We can. In fact, company just received its ISO 9001 certification about 4 days ago. So,
congratulations.
Got that certification back. Yep. And I think we have a CMMI level 3 certification as well. So yes, we can do process improvement. That's not typically where we focus our efforts initially. We find a lot of times that clients need help at kind of a basic strategy level. There's a lot to unpack in this uncertain world of national security. Things have moved and changed very quickly, over the past decade. And it means some of the legacy structures that we've set up around how we make decisions, how we document requirements for acquisition, just how we govern our enterprise. Some of the structures are really outdated now, and you can see that friction kind of on a daily basis with folks. And so a lot of what we do is help folks take a step back, think clearly about, where is it that we need to go? What needs to change in order to get there? And then if there's process improvement that needs to be executed as part of that, we can do that as well.
Okay. So what about dashboards using AI? That was kind of like the second major fact that I pulled down. Kind of walk us through what that is.
Yeah. Stephanie, do you want to do this one?
The doctor got tired of talking.
Stephanie, are you still awake?
We lost her.
Oh, we may have lost her. That's unfortunate.
She's still on the phone.
Yeah. So,
I would say it's because she's using an Apple, but then people get mad at me. So
that could be.
Let's keep going with you, sir.
Sure, no problem. So we do dashboards and visualization. The best ones we do are around solving a hard business problem. So if you're, for example, you want to know how technical your incoming hiring pipeline is. Using something like AI to go through resumes and formatted data to kind of extract, who's got a science degree, who's got, Python experience, and making sure it's, not the snake kind, they didn't work at a zoo. Put that all together so that you've got a sense of like who's coming into your pipeline and whether it's technical enough for the business you're in. So those are the kind of problems our analytics team loves working on. I kind of tease them a little bit because they are great at understanding the problem that the client actually has and not what was put down on paper. So often what we it isn't often the real problem. And this is actually where we excel as a consulting firm, right? That we're able to kind of dig into that, what's your real problem? What's your real decision that gets made? And then they put dashboards available using data sources. So we're growing out what we do for AI and ML in that practice. But again, centered around, a hard problem.
Okay.
Hey, give us a 30-second break here. We're going to try to get Stephanie back on while we go to a quick commercial break.
All right. Sounds good.
This podcast is brought to you by CHAFA, the Colorado Housing and Finance Authority. Since 1974, CHAFA has strengthened Colorado by investing in community development and affordable housing. CHAFA's community development team partners with lenders across the state to offer the financing you need to grow your business. Talk to your local lender about CHAFA's Cash Collateral Support Program, which helps small and medium-sized businesses access capital that would otherwise be unavailable due to collateral shortfalls. To learn more, visit chfainfo.com. Welcome back to this week's Smallest Cast podcast. We have both Stephanie and Cameron back on the phone. Welcome back, Stephanie and Cameron.
Stephanie, we were like, Stephanie?
Hello?
Bueller?
I'm sorry, I lost you guys.
It's okay.
Colorado reception, you know how it goes.
It's okay.
Yeah.
We just wanted to make sure you're all right and that we could get you back.
Okay, before we went on break.
We were talking about Stephanie before we went on break for about 10 minutes, and she just wasn't there anymore.
So we're like, man, the good doctor has just blown this out of the park. She's not, like, saying anything. Like, he's got it wrong. So I don't know where to go from here. Okay, dashboards.
We kind of got past that. We were talking about data analytics, but I did want to talk about, so you keep on mentioning the term hard business problems, and that's kind of big for me. Like, so when you say hard business problems, what's your kind of ideal client size, companies, you work with, I guess work with government, I don't know if there is a right size. And then kind of what's the left and right of that for hard problems, or is there a left and right?
Yeah, I can, I'll start this one and then I'll take it, give it over to Cameron.
Cameron, so, thanks you, by like the way. He's like, oh, let Stephanie take this one. And then no, she wasn't there anymore. So we got her back, Cameron. We got her back.
Yeah. Yeah. Take a sip of tea, Cameron. So yeah, talking about hard problems. So, you know, some distinct challenges out there I'm seeing for the space domain and particularly, you know, I think first, the oversight and authority for space is just like so disjointed and kind of all over the place. I think last I read more than like 50 different organizations across DOD and IC participate in space acquisition. And, you know, most of that space funding is in Air Force, right? But some key parts of that space architecture, you know, satellites, terminals, those things, those are in the Army and Navy. And then you have NRO with all their classified stuff and, you know, tying that to the MIT budget, you know, military intelligence program. So all the authorities are kind of all over the place. And then you have the workforce also all over the place, spread out across all the different agencies, people moving every few years, taking all their domain experience with them. So, you know, knowing that issues like these exist, I think Guidehouse can help with some of those. Like Cameron mentioned, with org transformation and business process reengineering, strategic comms, things like that in our core consulting services bundle. I think those are the things we want to tackle. Cameron, what would you add to that?
Yeah, that's good. I think one hard problem that we see that emerges over and over again is about mission need space and how to articulate what a mission really needs. So we find that both defense and the intelligence community have really well-developed acquisition processes, and you can decide whether those work for you or not. But that documentation process is designed to result in a system and an acquisition. But it's not always so clear how you feed in information about what the mission actually needs into that space. And if you are a mission owner or you're a caretaker for or a steward for something, how do you express what that looks like? And how do you make sure that sometimes multiple different programs on both ground and space side are influenced appropriately and reflect your understanding of what is required to move the mission forward, whether that's, you know, reflecting your customer needs, reflecting the state of the art for research and development. How do you put that together in a coherent package and tell a story and influence stakeholders? So that's some of the work that we're doing right now up at Buckley, is being able to kind of put a bow on that for customers. And it looks like, you know, sometimes designing brand new documents and artifacts that we put out there, sometimes that's creating campaign plans to influence stakeholders. So that's another example of a hard problem that I'd put out there.
Yeah, I was going to, you were able to speak eloquently on that. Now, so I was trying to figure out, well, they must be doing something already in that space, because you guys seem to have a good grasp of kind of things that are happening and kind of the needs space, as you mentioned right there.
So. But are you acting as a consultant for other firms, or are you acting as a consultant for the actual military or the government customer?
Yeah, so Stephanie and I, we act as consultants for government clients. To answer your size question, that can really be everything from division all the way through agency at the top level. One of the value propositions that we found is, you know, headquarters tends to understand the value of consultants and why they need consultants to solve some of their hard strategic integration problems. But we've also seen that divisions and even branches at the field level have some of those same hard problems and need some of that same consulting expertise. In fact, they need the ability to reach across organizational space or even across client space, bring in best practices from commercial or other government agencies that are doing something really cool, and apply it in at a tactical level. So it's not just about the headquarters, but about the field too. And for us here in Colorado, that you know, resonates super well. I've been here since 2002 up at Buckley, and you know, that's a special space that deserves attention solving some of their hard problems, just like an agency headquarters would.
Right. And as you mentioned, you don't typically see contractors at the higher or at the lower levels of organizations in within the Department of Defense. Typically, those are normally found at the higher levels, unless the mission is more strategic. So, yeah, that's a good read on that space too. That's definitely kind of the playground, if you will, of government contractors.
Well, and I honestly did not realize that. I've never personally, I guess, I've never seen the government hire consultants. Other than actually go out for bid. And then to see who wins that bid. So you guys are saying these were kind of sole source to you guys?
No, we like to compete for them.
Okay. So it was a competition that came out as like an RFP.
Happy to take sole source.
Yeah, and they're government contractors.
Yeah, so often it's, yeah, sometimes they are consulting contracts. That is less frequently the case. So often it's kind of a onesie, twosie, or a problem sets that are added on to a main contract. Okay. It is one of the challenges we find in the space is that, you know, the government knows very well how to contract for day-to-day services and knows very well how to buy a system, how to buy acquisition and engineering support. Gets a little fuzzier when it comes to consulting. And part of that's just the nature of it, right? So our what we like to do is solve problems that aren't fully articulated. And that doesn't entirely match up sometimes with the government contracting system, right? If you can describe everything that you want and need and articulate it with complete confidence, you probably don't need a consultant. You need a contractor. You need, you know, somebody to just execute that. So we like to work with clients to develop contracts, particularly around their harder problem sets, because they really do need somebody to help think through it and to bring an outside perspective, because it, you know, it just doesn't kind of, their default contracting typically doesn't generate that type of solution.
That beeping is Nate's phone.
I have it on. I have my phone.
Did we lose Stephanie again?
Stephanie?
I am here.
Okay. I have my phone on Do Not Disturb, and suspected spam still comes through. So,
So how did you guys, I just wanted to get a little personal here. How did you guys, get to consulting in Guidehouse? What led you to this place here? Because I know you probably didn't start out in this field, I'm assuming. I don't know. I have a daughter-in-law. She's actually in consulting. They're helping large companies transition IT systems. So like she's working with a company that's moving into Office 365, and they're helping the company, you know, roll that all in. But how did you guys get to where you're at today? And I'll start with Stephanie. So how did you get to doing this kind of work?
Tell us a tale.
Yeah.
So I actually started out my career in commercial finance.
Oh.
Nothing to do with government whatsoever. I transitioned to government finance with Boeing about 5 years ago, then moved on to a competitor of Guidehouse and visited Colorado one day and said, I kind of want to move here. And that's when I found the opportunity with Guidehouse to join Cameron's team out here. That was about 2.5 years ago.
So what did you do with at the other company? Same kind of stuff?
Same stuff, yes. Strategy and change management consulting.
Okay.
And then Boeing, though, you said you were there doing some of the finance side, or were you like a CAM, a cost account manager or something?
I was a business process and finance analyst there.
I'm just always curious to the people's journey. So your journey all kind of makes sense, actually. Your path, they're all related.
So I'm assuming, have you guys heard of the word Kaizen theory? Constant improvement? Japanese word for constant improvement?
Yeah.
I'm just curious. That's where I originally, in a previous life, I worked at Honeywell, and that's where I learned a lot of my Six Sigma, Kaizen theory, all of the above, trying to process improvement type scenario. So
Cameron, what's your...
Dr. Cameron.
What's your story? Jeez. You're never going to get this down now, Cameron.
Yeah, that's all right. Mine is not so straightforward. So I started my career as a tank platoon leader for the U.S. Army.
There you go. And then, see that? No, wait, stop. That's all you needed to say. We're done now. Next conversation. Just kidding. He's a treadhead. We like to call him.
Yep, that's right. So branch detailed to military intelligence. So I started my intelligence career in 2001, a banner year for the intelligence community, no doubt. And my last duty station in the Army, they sent me back from Korea to Buckley Air Force Base. And so involved in the national intelligence level there at Buckley. Transitioned from that to being a government civilian and worked with the Defense Intelligence Agency before finishing up with the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. And along the way, I got an MBA and another master's degree in organization management and a PhD in public affairs. And so I was acting kind of as an in-house consultant for the government, which, you, as you can imagine, it doesn't exactly know what to do with one of those, right? That's not a model it entirely understands. So when I hit my 20 years of federal service, I thought maybe this is time to see how the other half really lives. Along the way, I've gotten to know my partner, Nicole Gibson, at the time, you know, PwC's public sector consulting practice. We were on opposite sides of the table on a few engagements. And after a few years, talked her into letting me start our Colorado practice out here. So that's how I got into consulting. Really love the problem solving aspect. And it's great to split the time and attention between clients and be able to apply, you know, just really different skill sets on a daily, you know, weekly basis to those clients.
So that actually is a good story too, Cameron, by the way. That does tell you that you kind of see the thread there of, you know, problem solving. Even tankers solve problems, problem solving all the way through, you know, where you are today. And all the little aspects there are kind of related, you know, that's very interesting. And again, thank you for sharing that, both of you, because I'm always interested in people's journeys. What brought you to the place you're at today? And most people don't think about that too much.
Oh,
and
you guys were
able to talk about it.
I'm done. I found the answer to one of my age old questions.
What's that?
What does a tank driver do after they get out of the Army? Because all the kids I've ever, you know, they're like, I want to drive a tank. Yeah, but what do you do afterwards? Now I know what you do afterwards.
They go on to be national consultants.
There you go.
Our CEO, if he ever listens to this, he's a tanker.
My problem solving tends to be, it tends to be a lot less kinetic now than it used to be. But yeah, it's the same sort of skills.
Yeah, you know, you're surprised actually how stuff does transition over those things you learned back then. As a lieutenant or, you know, as a sergeant or whatever that you learned that transition over. So, well, yeah, thanks. Okay, so go ahead.
I had a quick question. Oh. So back on his list of things, I'm back on there again.
I got a lot too.
So this was when we dropped Stephanie. So Stephanie, we were talking about a list of things that you guys provide. One of the things you guys said was user experience. The voice of the user, I think, is really what it is. Are you guys like helping develop use cases of that end user so you can really understand the problem better? Or is that kind of part of it?
Stephanie, yeah,
Stephanie, you're there.
I can take it. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Colorado connection.
You're good.
No, we're good.
Yeah. So basically, yeah, what that means is combining UX and UI design and testing, visualizations and comms, and bringing that change management element into to take a more kind of empathetic approach to the users you're designing for. So yeah, definitely really understanding that human element there.
Okay. That's what
I'll just add to that. That is absolutely right. We find that as organizations get more mature with how they do user-facing development, they really start from this place where somebody guesses what the users want. And what we help lead organizations do is not guessing, you know, gathering, starting with personas where we don't know a whole lot about the user and use cases, into gathering, you know, rich data environment, and then ultimately involving the user all the way through, from not just at the end to be like, does this design work for you, but all the way in the beginning of the process. What functions are most important? How should they be organized? How should the process work all the way through? And even doing testing, like A-B testing, where you test two different designs and see if they work and how much ease is the user's pain point and where they help resolve friction so that you ultimately get to something that everyone wants to use and is really intuitive. You know, if you think about a lot of the systems that at least I grew up with required extensive training. To use, you know, sometimes weeks before you use a piece of software. And increasingly, that's just an outdated model where you know, fine, you don't often need training to use the most intuitive pieces of software. So that's where we try to get a government client to be at that level of performance with the user integrated.
I 100% agree with you guys. And what I found interesting there, out of everything you just said, you guys are actually using user personas. And that's kind of a fairly new technique, assigning personas to your use cases to find out really who the end user is. So whatever product or service you're developing will answer the mail, if you will.
Yep, that's right. And just to echo and flip on something Stephanie said, it's really an empathy aspect. So we find that we've got success when the developers and program managers have empathy for the user experience. That tends to result in some truly transformative interfaces and designs and systems.
Do you find that your customer, your government customer, is open to that those techniques now?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they've heard the buzz, particularly from the commercial world, and really just need a little bit of help figuring out how to apply it. Again, you know, our contracts, typical development contracts aren't structured that way. And so we find that we really go through this process of almost open hostility to the idea of someone coming in and saying, here's what the users are actually saying from developers to a process where developers and program managers really embrace it and seek it out. So that's how we know we've been successful. And the clients see real return on investment for that because they've got a system which is intuitive, easy to use. The customers love it, and it accomplishes the mission a lot better.
Well, I think it's a real paradigm shift too, right? Because even 5-10 years ago, the military is very big on for acquisition. Protocol. They can get protocol. This is what we're going to do. This is exactly what we want. And then, you know, I remember back in the day when I was part of programming teams and we'd say, hey, so what can we talk with the end user and develop use cases? Nope, they're not the one with the money. We don't care what they want. We're going to give them something. That's what they have to use. And I think that's changing now. It needs to change.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I would agree that 21st century, we're finally all starting to catch on. And I see more and more to the proposals and things I'm reading that the government is definitely moving towards what the commercial world is doing to get things, you know, as you guys always read, faster, better, quicker. And it may not always be that way, but they're looking for innovative ideas as part of that whole process as well. And the only way we're going to get there is with this kind of dialogue and talk. So, yeah. So how do companies get a hold of you guys if they need, you know, they're listening to this podcast and they decide, hey, we should get a hold of these guys that can help us with the government customer that we have or that, you know, their own business internal, because you guys also do internal support to companies. How do people get a hold of you guys? Did I lose you?
So Stephanie told me that the easiest way to do it, if you go to guidehouse.com, there's a little search icon, and if you type in Cameron Ward Hunt, you'll get my contact info, and you can email us. We do really like partnering with small businesses, realizing that, you know, we can really help expand their service envelope, help them, you know, provide some reach back to services that they may not be able to provide in-house, and just deepen their experience for customers. So really open to those conversations.
Okay, nice. Great. Yeah. And so, it's guidehouse.com. Is that what you said?
Yep, that's correct.
Okay, I just want to make sure I put a good plug in there for you guys in the website.
Well, and we'll put in the show notes as well. So, do you guys have anything else that you guys like to tell the community right now?
Yeah, I think one thing I'd like to mention that we haven't talked about before is the importance of supply chain risk management and how we see that growing in the next few years. So it's an area where here in Colorado, we've actually got an expert that's developing this for us. So I think it's worth noting. And so we're seeing lots of companies and clients and government clients struggle with this. So there's lots of new national security directives, lots of compliance aspects, and really a gap in meeting those requirements. And so one of the things we do is really help organizations understand how to build out a supply chain risk management program, establishing an org structure, training plans, policies, and putting that together, you know, often, if need be, with an enterprise risk management strategy and approach. We also have folks that can help with the threat assessment of that. So it's an area that we see growing and we think is worth noting, particularly for Colorado space community, because we only see these requirements are going to grow, and it's a difficult area for a lot of folks to wrap their heads around.
Yeah, I agree. That's huge. And I know we support Manufacturers Edge. They're doing some work right now on that in that space as well, and have been hosting. I think there's an event coming up here, or they just had it on supply chain management. And on the aerospace side, I know ULA, United Launch Alliance, is here in Colorado. They provide a lot of the rockets for the space station and for the Mars and also the Jupiter explorations. And that I think they use, I want to say, 2,000 vendors. So there's, you know, and most of those are local here in Colorado. So the number of aerospace industry partners here in the state is huge. And so I think you guys are right on with that that aspect in supply chain management. That's very important. And then the whole cyber side of it's a whole nother issue to talk about, but that's another space within that supply chain.
It is. And I think one of the things that I know that Dennis and I have been working with is here in Southern Colorado, especially the Pueblo region, is working with those suppliers, because we feel that between Denver Aerospace Group, Colorado Springs DOD, and then Pueblo as the manufacturer's area, we can pretty much produce everything within our own state here if we were to manage that supply chain more appropriately.
Yeah,
so opportunity there.
There is.
Opportunity knocks.
I think people just don't realize what we have in our own backyard. That's what I've been seeing.
Yep. And that's good for these guys because they're trying to expand. So it's good. Lots of opportunity here. Any last final words of wisdom for the group? Again, we got how to get a hold of you at pricewater.com. And then you can...
No. Guidehouse.com.
Oh my gosh.
Where
I should be shot.
What podcast are you listening to?
I still have Price Wire. I apologize.
It's guidehouse.com.
Yes.
And then you can search for Dr. Cameron Ward-Hunt. I'm assuming you could also search for Stephanie Malone.
Not quite sure. I'm high enough in the food chain yet. But Dr. Ward-Hunt.
Or you can get a hold of us at the Smalls, and we can put you in touch with both of them.
Exactly. You're high on our list, Stephanie.
That's right.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Nate.
Get you in touch.
I might have to help you out get a new service provider for your cell phone, but we can do that offline.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But I had no other questions, guys. I do appreciate you guys coming online today and kind of sharing a little bit about what you guys and Guidehouse is doing. It's very interesting. I learned a lot today. You know, according to Dennis, going into this not having a clue what you guys do, to now knowing that you guys are a consulting firm and you guys can even consult directly with the government. That's awesome.
Yeah. And thanks for having us on. And thanks for so much for what you do and helping to build out this ecosystem and connect folks. So I imagine it's often a thankless job, but we appreciate it. And we know it really makes a difference as we build out a robust Colorado national security community. So thank you so much.
You are welcome. It's slowly gaining, but it's gaining, so that's a good thing. So with that being said, guys, I want to say one last time, thanks for coming on the show, and we will be in touch. And till next week, this is Just Nate signing off.
Thanks for listening.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Smalls Cast podcast. Connect with us at thesmalls.org. Don't forget to sign up to our newsletter to receive our free materials. See you at the next episode. See you at the next episode.